It's Free Talk Live. You are invited to join us here on the radio waves. You can bring up anything that you want. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And we've got Skype, so you can Skype on in here at Skype username lrn.fm. Tonight in the studio with you, you've got Ian.
And Daryl.
So, yeah, we take requests. It's a talk radio show, but we're one of the few talk shows that actually takes requests. We prefer it when you call in to talk about what you want to discuss.
Yes.
But we did get a request from one of our Free Talk Live amplifiers, who is one of the folks who's contributing $5 a month, usually at least, to helping expand this show, getting on more new radio stations around the country, and bringing new internet listeners on board. You can sign up for the AMP program at amp.freetalklive.com. But he posted a video, I think it was last night, on the AMP Facebook group.
And I have to say, I have not watched the video because I don't like watching videos of people being killed.
Yeah. When I started watching the video, I didn't realize that was what was going to happen until I read one of the comments. And I actually just stopped watching it just because I've seen so many police violence videos.
Right.
It's just, it's hard to handle. I mean, you see one, you feel like you've seen them all. I mean,
right.
they're just, I've seen so many of them, having been involved with copblock.org for so long. And they just keep coming. It's not like the police state's, you know, turning in a different direction, going, you know, getting smaller. The police are getting less involved in our personal lives. They're crushing the life out of innocent people on a
literally
fairly regular basis.
Crushing the life out of people.
Yeah. So you've got a story about
There's
this.
Actually an update on this, because I think...
Well, first of all, what is it? What happened?
Well, let me just get into the story from the Washington...
Okay, very good.
Yeah, from the Washington Post. Days after an off-duty Texas sheriff's deputy was accused of helping her husband choke a man to death outside of a Denny's, both have now been charged with murder.
Uh-oh.
And before I ever saw this article, and it's kind of a fluke that we're even talking about this, because I'll generally, you know, an hour or so before the show, go look on Google News, see what's on that front page. And this story happened to have been on the front page, and I was like, oh, hey, somebody wanted us to talk about this. But prior to seeing this story, I'd not seen any real news reports other than people sharing a video.
It's also on the front page over at freetalklive.com, as submitted by David Ford here.
And I knew that, you know, there was some kind of something involving a sheriff deputy's husband and some guy getting killed. And that's all I knew prior to this. But now they've actually been charged. And I think, and I'm going to speculate here, I think because the husband was the one that was actually involved in the fighting instead of the off-duty officer.
Right.
That's most likely why there was a murder charge.
Because he wasn't a cop.
He wasn't a cop.
So he doesn't get the special dispensation even though he's married to one, you don't think?
No. Okay. Because he doesn't have all kinds of immunities because he's not a government employee.
True. That's true.
The article continues. Harris County Sheriff's Deputy Shauna Thompson and her husband Terry Thompson were indicted Thursday in the killing of a 24-year-old John Hernandez. Hernandez was hospitalized after he was choked during a late-night encounter with the couple on May 28th and died 3 days later. The Thompsons turned themselves in to authorities Thursday night and were released from jail on $100,000 bail, according to the Associated Press.
Because, I mean, as a police officer, whether she was off duty or not, she has an obligation to act in a circumstance like this.
Correct.
Presumably. I mean, because normally when they see a felony being committed, because they have the ability to use discretion in a lot of cases, like to look the other way if they want
right.
to. But normally if they see a felony being committed, it's my understanding they shall act if they witness something like that.
That's also my understanding,
yeah.
But I think some of that varies state to state.
Okay.
As far as whether there's an affirmative thing or just you're authorized to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of a different, some people would say it's a difference of minutia.
Well, it's certainly not good PR.
Whether you're allowed to or whether you're required
yeah.
to.
Yeah, this is Texas, so I don't know what the The restrictions are.
Deadly Memorial Day weekend confrontation started outside the restaurant in Shelton, Texas, about 17 miles northeast of Houston. Investigators say Hernandez had been drinking and was urinating outside the restaurant when Terry Thompson approached him. A verbal confrontation turned physical, although it's unclear who escalated it, according to authorities. What happened next was captured by a passerby on cell phone video.
I was going to say the fun of running a 24-hour diner establishment. You get all kinds.
As the video starts, Hernandez is seen face down on the ground, kicking and struggling to get Thompson off of him. Mm. Thompson had his arms locked around Hernandez's neck and used his chest to pin the younger man to the ground. In the video, Shauna Thompson is seen helping her husband by pinning Hernandez's arms.
Oh, interesting. The cop.
On her knees, she yells to Hernandez, "Stay the F down."
Mm-hmm.
Her husband says, "Do you want me to hit you again?" Hernandez's wife, Maria Terral, and their daughters were inside the Denny's during the confrontation and rushed outside, according to CNN.
Oh, my gosh.
The family's attorney, Randall Kalinin, told CNN the little daughter was screaming, "Quit hitting my daddy." And I could not imagine what it would be like to, you know, witness as a young child to witness your father being assaulted and
have his
eventually
extinguished,
murdered, basically. Melissa Trammell, a Denny's employee, said she was standing next to the girl and also begged Terry to get off of Hernandez. Trammell said Hernandez was kicking for his life, struggling. "At first, I thought it was legitimate." She then testified to a grand jury. "He was just going to hold him down, whatever, when I see the man turning purple."
Oh, my God.
"And there was no let up. And Thompson looked me in the face and told me he was not getting off."
Wow.
The Thompsons continued until Hernandez was immobile. So they choked this guy unconscious. And, he didn't die for three more days, but, you know, like, they basically choked him to death.
Yeah. He died from injuries received by being choked nearly to death.
When Shauna Thompson, quote, observed that the man had stopped resisting, and, yes, those are the actual words, he stopped resisting, she and her husband stopped restraining him. That's a quote from the Harris County Sheriff, Gonzalez.
He took a pee in the parking lot. That's what this was about? The guy who was just murdered by this cop's husband, as an off-duty cop, watched this happen and assisted.
Not just watched, but assisted.
Assisted with a murder.
Quit resisting.
Because of effluence, which is the legal term for letting something flow from something unauthorized. That's what they'll charge you with, generally, at least around here, if you get caught peeing in public. That's what this was about.
Yes. And again, that quote from the sheriff, Gonzalez. Shauna Thompson observed that the man had stopped resisting. She and her husband stopped restraining him. But Hernandez was not breathing. Shauna Thompson then attempted CPR as paramedics arrived on the scene. Hernandez was rushed to the hospital, but he slipped into a coma and died 3 days later. The Harris County Medical Examiner said Hernandez died from a lack of oxygen to the brain caused by chest compression and strangulation.
Well, thank goodness the poor children that were in that Denny's didn't have to see a man peeing nearby.
Yeah.
The toll-free number tonight here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. So what's the latest in this story? I think there was, the headline over at freetalklive.com is that she and the husband have been indicted by grand jury.
Yes, yeah. And that was what I said at the very beginning here.
Okay.
She was also placed on administrative leave. And the sheriff's office says she's cooperating with investigators.
Well, yeah, you got caught on video. Of course you're cooperating.
Scott Courtney, a lawyer for Terry Thompson, told the Associated Press he didn't believe there was enough evidence to warrant a murder indictment.
Our toll-free number if you want to join us. Maybe you support choking the life out of people who are peeing in public. Our toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. We'll be right back. It's Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll free here and bring up whatever is on your mind. That's 855-450-3733. 855-450-FREE, like freedom, with you in the studio tonight. You've got Ian.
And Daryl.
Also, do want to let you know about how you can get some health care that's not insurance. You can actually get HealthExcellenceSelect.com. They are a free market health care company that gives you freedom from health insurance. What they are is a health care sharing organization. And they can actually get you access to no-charge 24-hour access to doctors, as well as a proactive health assessment daily, plus a medical information card you can give to EMS, first responders, the emergency room, or whatever medical professional you want. Check them out right now at HealthExcellenceSelect.com. They've got any kind of doctor, traditional, integrative, chiropractic, acupuncture, and even massage. You'll love the service and the price at HealthExcellenceSelect.com. We were talking about a disturbing video that I didn't want to get all the way through. It was the part I watched. It seemed like there was actually a uniformed police officer standing in front of the camera person. And again, I'll have to pull it up again. Just I can't play it on the air because clearly there's some language that we can't run on the airwaves, provided by the police officer who was apparently off duty at the time. She and her husband were at this Denny's. Some yes. dude, 24-year-old with his kids inside, was drunk outside the Denny's, was apparently attempting to
allegedly
urinate.
Allegedly drunk, according right. to the guy that choked him to death.
Good point. Yeah, maybe he wasn't. But the allegation was that he was attempting to urinate outside of the Denny's, and so this man decided to take it upon himself and choke the man basically to death.
According to his wife, who is the sheriff's deputy there in Harris County, they had to make sure that he stopped resisting. Once he stopped resisting, we stopped restraining him.
Now, in the video that is provided here, it was Drew, who's one of our Free Talk Live amplifiers. There is this the man with the yellow, or excuse me, I guess a red pinkish shirt. That's obviously Terry. That's the man who
is a big boy
crushing him. Okay, I apologize. It wasn't a cop standing in front of the camera person. It was some man in a leather jacket. So it appears almost as though that the cop and her husband, who again are choking this man on the ground, the police officer is holding him, assisting in holding him down. She's not in a uniform. So
she was off duty.
Right. Well, you can still be off duty, but I guess still have your uniform on for a short period of time, right? Unless you have to dress out.
That depends on jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Right.
Some places will not allow you to be in uniform when you are not on duty.
And so whoever it was that was running interference here, I wonder if they were friends of the couple, because there's two people who are obviously trying to get in the way of this camera person who is recording this incident outside of the Denny's. So I wonder if they were together with these others and they were all assisting basically in trying to cover up this murder. Because whoever the man in the leather jacket was clearly does not want that person there recording. He's obviously getting in the way. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why nobody who was nearby tried to take this guy off of this other man. I mean, he was a large man, no doubt about that.
Right.
So it would have been difficult. But, you know, if there were a decent number of people at that Denny's, in a lot of cases when people are fighting in real life, people will step in and say, hey, you know, even if they're total strangers, they'll step in.
Not so much anymore.
No?
Not so much anymore, because, you know, there's always the thing of, well, you don't know what happened before the fight started.
It's true.
Hell,
it's true.
Even
but if you're watching a man choked to death.
How many people just stood around when Eric Garner was getting choked to death?
Great point.
How many people stayed in their seats when the police in, was it Chicago O'Hare, assaulted the guy and drug him off of the United plane? Nobody stood up and said, I volunteer to give up my seat. Stop assaulting that man. People will sit around and watch anything.
Okay,
they pull out their cell phones.
I get you. And I mean, at the very least, they record. That's better than not doing anything. But ultimately, there's a difference
they're
in how
documenting
people
documenting themselves not doing anything.
Okay, but in my opinion, there's a difference between how somebody will behave if they're presented with a man who's in a uniform and with a gun who's committing violence versus a plainclothes person like this.
And that's one of the things that Davy Barker had the brilliant idea for the Renegade psychological experiment that has never actually happened, but the idea is still out there. He wrote a book about it, Authoritarian Sociopathy.
Great book.
But even the incident on that United flight, any one of those passengers could have said, I will give up my seat if you stop hitting that man. And nobody did.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anybody on that plane should have just, you know, like gone and cold cocked the police officer.
Sure.
There are other things they could have done to try to have stopped that assault. And nobody did.
Yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I can't say I blame someone for not wanting to interject themselves in a situation where you have, you know, in that case, in the United flight, I think it was two or three cops, you know, three armed men get on the plane and start throwing an innocent Asian man around, busting his nose.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty intimidating circumstance. I wouldn't blame anybody for staying seated and staying quiet during that. I get the fear. I understand it. I'm part of copblock.org, so I'm more likely to speak up and tell them to stop doing that. But I don't know if I would have thought at that moment to give up my seat.
I just like getting free airline miles and stuff. So like I'd have been up there. You sure you can't get me on another flight? I'll definitely take that $1,000.
Yeah. Well, you would have given it up in advance of that happening.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I've, you know, had things where I had, you know, offered to volunteer and they're like, yeah, we're not going to be able to get you where you need to go in a timely manner. And, you know, like, if police would have got onto the plane and started dragging somebody off, I'd have been like, let him take my seat. I can wait 2 days.
Which would have, you know, given you this sort of, you would have been able to claim that, and that's good. But I think in that moment, what that would have happened would be the police would have just continued to drag him off. They were in that mode of, we're going to hurt this guy. You know, we're going to do what we need to do to get this recalcitrant man off of the plane. And they did that. And it would have been interesting to see what happened. Obviously, we can't compare apples with oranges. But right. I suspect that given the sort of the mindset of those officers at the time, you would have been ignored, told to shut up, and they were going to get him out of there regardless of what anybody said. That's what I believe would have transpired.
Probably, you know, and again,
based on the adrenaline rush factor, man, when those cops
based on the adrenaline rush, sure, but also the flight attendant could have been like, oh, we finally have a volunteer, leave that guy alone.
Maybe it would have worked if it had come from the flight attendant because
someone
in authority.
I'm volunteering, and then the flight attendant, all right, yeah, we've got a volunteer. So let's get back into the article here from the Washington Post.
I didn't know there was more. Sure.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely
more. We're going to do that in a moment. More about the man who was murdered outside of a Denny's for having to go to the bathroom, apparently.
Yes.
Some man decided, a husband of a cop decided he was going to choke the life out of him, and he did that in front of witnesses, including being assisted by his wife, who's a cop. And they've now both been charged. 855-450, free like freedom, 855-450-3733. You can join us on the radio on Free Talk Live.
Bitcoin.com is the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. Buying Bitcoin? Do it here. Want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users? Our forum is always open and censorship free at forum.bitcoin.com. There's no bigger Bitcoin believers than the Bitcoin.com team. That's why this site is a one-stop shop for everything you need to get into Bitcoin life. You can also play games at games.bitcoin.com. Learn more at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
It's Free Talk Live, and you can bring up anything you want. We're talking about a police officer and her husband who did the majority of the work, who choked the life out of a 24-year-old man outside of a Denny's. And where was it, Texas?
Yes, about 17 miles northeast of Houston, town of Sheldon, Texas.
You're welcome to comment on that. You can also bring up anything you want. And if you want to help Free Talk Live out and get the stuff you want online at regular Amazon excellent prices, you can go to shop.freetalklive.com. You enter Amazon, through the links we provide to you. There's a U.S. Amazon, a U.K. Amazon, and a Canada Amazon. You just go to the right Amazon for you, and Free Talk Live gets a portion of the purchase price. It's that simple. So start your shopping at shop.freetalklive.com. That's shop.freetalklive.com. Ian and Daryl are here. Daryl, you said there was more to this story.
Yes.
We heard they've both been indicted by a grand jury for this. Was it murder charges? Do you happen to recall what the actual charges were?
That's what it said. I'm not sure if it's, you know, murder one, murder two, manslaughter, homicide, because, you know, there's various degrees of murder.
And there's video of this, by the way, for those that are unaware. Go ahead with the latest.
Scott Courtney, again, the lawyer for Terry Thompson, told the AP he did not believe there was enough evidence to warrant a murder indictment.
Really?
He also criticized the sheriff's office for putting the case before a grand jury less than 2 weeks after the incident.
What is it? You're supposed to wait a long time before you do that?
Apparently, but if they'd have waited longer, you're denying them a right to a speedy trial.
Yeah.
The lawyer says Thompson's actions were self-defense.
Oh,
he told CNN, after being confronted with urinating in public, rushed my client and struck him in the face. I consider that an attack. The victim's cousin, Melissa Hernandez, told the AP that the indictments were a great step in the right direction. She said the family would keep fighting until they get the justice that John deserves. Hernandez's death comes as law enforcement officers are under increased scrutiny for fatal confrontations, particularly among minorities. According to the Washington Post Fatal Force database, so far this year, 421 people have been shot and killed by police. I've seen another report of over 500. And this is one of those things to where there is no FBI gathering
statistics
of this data. There is no gathering of this data by the 50 different state governments. This is something that journalists have to independently research. And yeah, you're not going to pick everything up. You might get something on your list. I can almost guarantee that there's something on the Washington Post list that is not on the list from killedbypolice.net. I can almost guarantee it.
Sure. You know, back to the alleged facts in the case here, they're claiming that the 24-year-old victim was actually the instigator and that he attacked the murderer physically, or the alleged murderer
physically. That's the claim, yes.
Went to hit him in the face. You know, even if, let's presume that's true, and, you know, maybe there's some camera footage from the Denny's, maybe there were some witnesses, so who knows how that's going to shake out. But let's just presume that's true. If somebody comes up and busts you in the, you know, chops, does that justify choking them to death?
No. Now, this is one of those things to where if Melanie were here, she would say it's perfectly justified in accordance with the non-aggression principle because she doesn't believe in proportionality. To where if I stilled your stapler, then you're perfectly justified in shooting me in the head to retrieve your stapler.
I think we had a discussion with her about that, and I don't think that was her exact position.
She said, it makes you a horrible person, but you're completely justified.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think that that's... I don't think that that viewpoint is the most common one among libertarians.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, you know, there are people that will defend it and be like, yeah, go ahead, choke somebody because they stepped on your flowers.
No, I think that all you should have the right to do is to stop the attack, ultimately.
Yes.
And once this dude, this humongous guy, I mean, he must have been 250 pounds at least, maybe three, big guy. Once he had the 24-year-old on the ground, completely under his control,
right,
there is a time at which it would have been appropriate to stop and to pull back.
Yes.
And he didn't.
Correct. Because
even with people shouting at him, including the little girl.
As reported by the sheriff of Harris County, he said that Shauna Thompson, who's the sheriff's deputy, wanted to make sure that the man had stopped resisting. And at that point, you know, when he was already unconscious, that is when they stopped restraining him.
Yeah.
Well, no, you don't make sure somebody's unconscious before you stop restraining them. That is asinine. The article continues, dozens of people gathered at the Denny's on Thursday, the day of the indictments, vowing to support the Hernandez family through the trial and demanding justice. Some held signs calling for hashtag justice for John, and the hashtag has spread onto social media. Ernesto Saravia, the brother-in-law of John Hernandez, told CBS affiliate KHOU, "Every time I see my niece, I realize she's not going to get her father back.
Yeah,
she's not going to get her father back in 5 years. She's not going to get him back in 10 or 20. So I want everybody, or rather, I want what everybody wants. I want to get that life sentence." So I'm
not going to happen.
I don't know. I'm.
He's still the husband of a cop. I think he's going to get some leeway.
We'll see. Possibly, I hope I'm wrong. But I am happy to see that the family is not calling for the death penalty here.
Okay.
Because killing somebody isn't going to unkill your loved one.
That's right.
And, you know, knowing the way the death penalty has been carried out in the United States and elsewhere around the world, we know for a fact that innocent people have been killed.
True.
I'm not saying this guy's innocent, but you know what he did. I you know, still don't think it warrants the death penalty, especially
it's
not
a bigger punishment.
Government sanctioned death penalty.
It's a bigger punishment to stay in prison than to be killed. I mean, because getting killed gets somebody out of it all sooner. You know what I mean? Like staying in there for decades, that's way worse.
Right.
So if you want to comment, you're welcome to join us here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Plus, I don't think that, you know, a husband of a cop who murdered a, from all indicators, likely innocent man is going to do too well inside inside prison.
They'll put him in protective custody or whatever they wind up calling it there in Texas.
Could be, although he isn't the cop, though.
He's not the cop, right. But still, you know, they know that, these people are more likely to wind up being assaulted or having a difficult time in general population, mm-hmm. so we're going to put them in protective custody.
So it's just a horrible story and yet another example of the police, in this case, getting away with murder. Remember, the woman who helped this man snuff the life out of the 24-year-old victim was a cop. She assisted in holding
him
down.
She still is a cop.
Yeah.
She's only on administrative leave.
She could have been trying to get her husband off of this man and doing her job to stop violence in society. But no, she contributed to this situation. And the video is very short. I will post a link to it on our Facebook and Twitter. You can take a look at it for yourself. Make your own decision about this. It is, you know, I wonder if the full video was longer because the video in this article at, KPRC out of Houston is probably less than a minute, about 52 seconds long. So I do wonder if there might be, because obviously if it's coming from a news channel, sometimes they don't show you the whole thing.
Right.
So it would be more interesting to see how much context was captured here in what if there is a more full video. If you've seen that, definitely link us to it. You can post it on our Facebook or Twitter and or email it, ian@freetalklive.com. We'll continue here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got some Venezuela news as well. And, of course, you can take control of the airwaves. You can bring up whatever's on your mind here on Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll free and join us right here on the radio waves. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
Also, don't forget, you can enjoy the features on our website. They are free. In fact, you can create the content right there on the front page of the site. It's a Reddit-based front page, which means it's free to submit whatever news story that you want. So this one that we've been talking about here with the folks, the cop and her husband choking a man to death. That's right there on the front page. Thanks to our listeners like you for submitting content so we can see it and we know what's important to you. Because we, you know, obviously we can go out and we can pick show prep. That's not a problem. But it's nice to know what our listeners think is interesting and worth talking about. And that's what our website allows us to know. And you can contribute to it directly by going to freetalklive.com and getting interactive there. It's totally free. Once again, that's freetalklive.com. To the phones, to the fun. Let's talk to Dave. He's in New Hampshire. You're on with Ian and Daryl.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Dave.
Well, I guess the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire has just had what I believe may be its first primary.
Really?
Just regaining ballot access to New Hampshire.
So what is this, one of these special elections that's been
there have working? Been about three special elections so far this year.
But there was actually a primary for the Libertarians, meaning there were two Libertarians challenging for a seat?
No.
No.
There was,
I think it was an
uncontested person
primary.
That filed. That's the Senate special election where a former state rep had said he was going to file and then wound up not filing because somebody else filed.
And this is a state senator who passed away shortly after being
Correct.
Elected, so they need to fill his seat.
Correct.
And the Libertarian Party is gearing up. I mean, the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire has really hit the scene in the last, I don't know, 9 months, basically, and taken off running after about 20 years of being essentially, you know, asleep. The Libertarian Party had Daryl W. Perry, who is my co-host here tonight, elected to the chairmanship of the party, and Roger Paxton, also another principled libertarian, the vice chairman of the party.
Yes.
You guys have really kicked things into high gear over there, and as a result, you had a tremendous success in the 2016 elections, which got the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire ballot access on an equivalent level, supposedly, as the Republicans and Democrats. Supposedly,
but yes.
There's been a few bumps in the road, shall we say.
Yes, and there's another special election where we're actually going before what's called the Ballot Law Commission and had an issue trying to get a candidate on the ballot for that. So we've got the hearing on Tuesday, and hopefully we'll wind up being able to get our candidate placed on the primary ballot for that election.
So,
where
Dave, comments?
Where can I find information about this access denial question, if that's what's going on?
The Secretary of State's website, sos.nh.gov, and then
so
on
you
that
guys
front
haven't covered
page.
It? You guys haven't covered it over at lpnh.org?
No, because what are we going to do? Oh, we're going to the Ballot Law Commission. Find out more in,
I see.
You know, whenever they actually hear it and then make a determination.
Would it help to have people turn out and support you?
The only people that can speak are me and John Babiarz, who's the candidate.
Okay.
So there could be 10,000 people show up, nobody gets to say a word, and it's not going to sway the Ballot Law Commission how many people show up.
So are they trying to stop someone from getting on the ballot?
So what had happened is John Babiarz, who had previously, I think, three or four times been the LP's gubernatorial candidate, wanted to file for special election in Grafton. And he had not, prior to this filing period, had not changed his voter registration from undeclared to libertarian. Went to change his voter registration. The city clerk or town clerk denied him the ability to change his voter registration. And because the wording on the form for getting placed on the primary ballot says, I certify under penalty of perjury that I am a registered member of fill-in-the-blank party. Well, he's a dues-paying member of the party, but he's not registered to vote under the party because the clerk refused him the ability to do that. So he would be committing perjury to fill out that form. So the two options before him are commit perjury or file a complaint to the Ballot Law Commission. And we chose the latter.
Right. Okay, sounds a little bit complicated, but it also does sound like he's being interfered with.
Well, when you have to go before a group of bureaucrats to be able to get placed on the primary ballot, it's a burden.
Yep.
It's not as big of a burden as go collect a bunch of signatures, but it's a burden nonetheless.
That's true.
I think the LPNH is more powerful when it's being interfered with than it when people are just leaving it be. So I think this is important, and it gives us a chance to talk about it more, what's going on. But one other thing I wanted to mention is that I guess the guy who was running, Jason Dubrow, received an endorsement from at least one Republican state rep or former state rep.
The guy who was running for what?
That Senate election.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, John Heichel endorsed Jason Dubrow, the Libertarian candidate here.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, so what else, Dave? Anything else you want to share tonight?
That's it.
All right, man. Hey, that's Dave Ridley from RidleyReport.com. I appreciate hearing from you, Dave. And Dave just caught wind, apparently, yesterday of our listener that's been riding his bicycle across the country up from Florida.
Dunker.
Correct. At dunkerbike.com. And he, we haven't heard from him in a couple few days, unless you guys heard from him last night.
I have not spoken with him, but I have seen where he's posted updates online.
Yep.
One of the updates was, I'm sleeping in today, and it's going to be a short day.
Good for him, man. He's been hustling, doing like 100 miles a day from Sebastian, Florida, riding up to New Hampshire on his move. This is his move from the South, moving to New Hampshire. As we've discussed many times here on Free Talk Live, the active migration that is happening of libertarians and voluntarists and liberty-loving anarchists, people that care about freedom, they're planning and making their moves up here. And more people seem to be coming in here as the weeks go by. Of course, we're just about a week away now from Somalia Fest, which is going to be a first ever, I guess officially it happened last year as sort of a subset of the Porcupine Freedom Festival, which was the yearly camping festival that was put on by the Free State Project up here for a long time. Porkfest is happening this year, but it's been cut back as far as its length of time. It used to be a week long. It's now only just a few days in length, 3 or 4 days. And so now that that event has been cut back in its length, and they apparently kept the price the same, so they effectively doubled the per-day price. There's a competing event now. Somalia Fest has broken away from the Porcupine Freedom Festival. It will be taking place the 4 or 5 days before the Pork Fest happens, and there's no admission fee. So anybody besides the camping, whatever you would pay to camp there, because the Pork Fest has a ticket that you have to buy to go to their stuff. Somalia Fest doesn't have a central organizer. It's just sort of this thing that's going to happen, just libertarians camping at Rogers Campground up in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. We're planning on going up there and doing our show a little bit differently this time around, which I'm kind of excited about. We're going to be doing pre-recorded segments of the show, which means we're not going to be live from Somalia Fest, but we are going to kind of get a different feel on the air because we're going to be able to like set up at a campsite, basically throw the equipment on a table and, you know, just interview people. We'll have Roger Paxton on, for instance, from the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire and the
also
Lava Show,
the Lava Flow. And podcast. He's one of the organizers of Porkfest.
No. Poor bastard. So anyway, he's going to be at Somalia Fest on at least one or two of the days, and so we're looking to talk to him. So we'll talk to some of the interesting personalities that are there, and it'll be just, you know, it'll be very much like doing it live, because we've been broadcasting live from that campground for, I don't know, not quite a decade, but several years. And so it'll be different because we'll be able to just kind of record throughout the day, like we do at the Bitcoin conventions. Because when we go to these Bitcoin conventions, our show's in the evening. The convention's usually over by the time our show's on. So it was always hard, very difficult to get convention guests to, come on back at 8 p.m. and, you know, we'll interview
you. While everybody else is partying at the after party.
Yeah, so it was very difficult. So we started doing recorded segments, and that just makes more sense. So this will be the first time that we'll be camping at Rogers Campground or be at this event and actually have our evenings free. So that'll be a little bit different. So we'll be on the radio in the evenings, but in a recorded format. And to the listener, it won't really make any difference. I mean, it was very rare that people would call in during those shows anyway.
Correct.
And it was always awkward. Like, we would be in the middle of a guest, and then we'd, like, take a call after that.
Sarah would call in about red light cameras, because she doesn't listen.
The toll-free number tonight is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. I think SomaliaFest.com is the website offhand.
Know.
But if you search for Somalia Fest, you'll find out more about that. So Free Talk Live will be there for at least a couple few of those days. It's Free Talk Live. We're coming up.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low and transactions are confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime for just pennies on the dollar. Get started at Dash.org. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. Join Dash and help us create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org and get your own Dash wallet today. That's Dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. You may dial toll-free and join us right here on the radio. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. You can Skype on in here. Skype username is lrn.fm. The latest from Venezuela, or at least updates from Venezuela. I actually don't have the exact latest, but I suspect that the S is continuing to hit the fan there until at some point the people of Venezuela are going to have had enough.
Well, it's not as bad hitting the fan in Venezuela as in most places because their electricity isn't working, so the fan's not running. Most places, when it hits the fan, it spreads everywhere.
Now, are you saying that the electricity now is worse than it was, or that just, are you making a general comment about how the government provides the electricity in Venezuela, and so therefore, and since it's subsidized, that people use it way too much and there are frequent brownouts and blackouts?
Yes.
Okay. But yeah, if you apparently they'll give electricity to the industrial areas more than they will the residential areas, and as we learned months ago on this program, there are secret Bitcoin mines that people have set up computing equipment to mine for Bitcoin, and the secret police in Venezuela are on the hunt for those people. So it's a crazy situation out there, deepening crisis as people have been hitting the streets for weeks now in just ongoing protests out there, people being killed by thugs who have taken the side of the government, probably because the government gave them guns. And they're basically doing the bidding of Nicolas Maduro, who's the president of the country, while not officially being part of the government. They're just armed hooligans who have decided to align themselves for the purposes of gaining power with the states. So you can share your thoughts with us here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. We'll figure out what the latest is. But I've actually had a piece here from FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education, that is entitled What Venezuela Can Teach Young Socialists. Because, you know, if you talk to a socialist and you say to them, hey, look, Mr. Socialist, here's your socialist paradise, Venezuela. Look what's happening. Look what socialism has wrought on the people there. The socialists that, if they're worth their salt, they will likely say something to the effect of, well, that's not true socialism. And just blow it off, blow it off the table. Oh, no, that's not how socialism's supposed to be done. See, they got it all wrong. If you were to just put the socialist you're talking to in charge, or their favorite socialist, say Bernie Sanders or something like that, then everything would be a socialist utopia. The people wouldn't have to work anymore, and we would all just be feeding and eating grapes off from our machine overlords. But anyway, let's get into the story here from the Foundation for Economic Education, where Marianne El Tupi writes the following. Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet dictator between 1953 and 1964, allegedly said that, quote, when the world is socialist, Switzerland will have to remain capitalist so that it can tell us the price of everything, unquote. Now, just as it was important that the communists would be continuously exposed to at least one country that got its economics right, such as Switzerland, so it is instructive for the capitalist world to be continuously exposed to at least one country that gets its economics wrong, such as Venezuela. Khrushchev.
Now, here they're using the term capitalist to mean something akin to a free market, not a regulated economy.
I presume, right? That's what it sounds like, because we don't have a free market.
Right.
So they must not be referring to a free market. Khrushchev, like all the early communists, believed in the eventual triumph of socialism. In the early 1920s, the Soviet Union sold some of its best art to American millionaires, such as the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Andrew Mellon, in order to raise funds so they might prevail in their Russian Civil War. The communists believed they would get the paintings back after communism triumphed in the United States. In the event America got the National Gallery of Art, while the Russians were left with empty rooms at the Hermitage. But Khrushchev's point about Switzerland was a serious one. Early opponents of socialism, including Ludwig von Mises and Friedrich Hayek, pointed out that without the free market, socialists would have no way of determining the prices of anything. In a capitalist economy, nobody sets the prices of goods and services, unless, of course, one considers heavily regulated parts of the economy, such as the American healthcare system under Obamacare. Prices emerge spontaneously, depending on supply and demand. Socialist countries, in contrast, employ thousands of bureaucrats who try to estimate future supply and demand and incorporate those estimates into Soviet five-year plans. And the old story was...
There are five-year plans all around the United States. There are bureaucrats that set the price of all kinds of things. The price of milk...
Yeah, that's very controlled.
...is established by some government bureaucrat...
Federal,
...or
yeah.
a group of legislators somewhere.
Sure is. I mean, the United States has plenty of socialism within it.
Price of corn. Price of wheat. Well, right, pork bellies.
And so beyond just straight up price controls, which do happen as you're referring to. There's also, of course, taxes and on imports that
sugar
mess with the prices of things that interfere with the free marketplace.
Right, and when you add the thing, so there's the tariffs on sugar, and then corn is heavily subsidized and the price is set. So that's why you wind up with most sodas. Or Coke, where I'm from,
right.
having high fructose
corn syrup
in it. Now, you can find the Mexican Coke or the throwback Pepsi that does have sugar, but that's not the standard thing.
You're paying a premium for Mexican Coke. You've got to import that.
Even the throwback Pepsi.
More expensive.
It's more expensive
because
than
they have
the
to,
stuff with the high fructose.
Because they have to pay more for the sugar that they use in that product because of the import controls and tariffs.
And the subsidies on corn.
Yep, exactly.
So you're driving down the price of one thing and driving up the price of something else. It's no wonder people use the cheaper thing.
Exactly right. Now, I mean, we can pick apart the United States and its various different socialist policies. There's no doubt that it has a myriad of them. Of course, we haven't even touched on things like Social Security and various other wealth redistribution programs that the government of the United States has. But to really look at socialism in complete free fall and failure, Venezuela is quite instructive. So back to fee.org. So the point about Switzerland was a serious one. They say here that prices emerge spontaneously in a relatively free economy, depending on supply and demand, whereas these in socialist countries, they have bureaucrats who try to decide these things. And, of course, the old story about the Soviet Union was that they were checking the Sears catalog to try to figure out what the prices of things should be, which, of course, doesn't really translate because the economics or the economy in the United States is not going to be the same, whatever the prices would be in Russia wouldn't be exactly the same anyway for a variety of different reasons. So by Khrushchev's time, it was clear that the Soviet plans were not worth the paper they were scribbled on. The failure of central planning explained both the shortages of basic goods in the Soviet Union and the need for an independent and capitalist Switzerland. Conversely, it's useful for people in free market democracies to be constantly reminded of the consequences of alternative economic and political arrangements, such as those in contemporary Venezuela. The country's attempt to build 21st century socialism has run into predictable problems, including rising infant mortality rates, triple-digit inflation, widespread food shortages. By the way, we'll talk more about the inflation coming up here in moments, but I don't know if you've checked recently, but as of a couple of weeks ago, it was 6,000 bolivars to one U.S. dollar.
Wow, that's like double what it was the last time I looked.
Yeah, prior
and
to...
And that was just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it's getting crazy. It's been crazy.
It's all the fault of a guy that works at Home Depot in Hoover, Alabama.
That's right. The guy who runs the website DollarToday.com, the Venezuelan government has been blaming him, as well as the United States in general, for all of their economic woes. We'll continue here with what's going on in Venezuela and what lessons can be learned for young socialists. Because a lot of socialists are young, given that they're just coming out of the government schools or they've been indoctrinated with a lot of these ideas. They've never actually worked in the semi-free market. You know, we're comparing it to other countries. And they really don't know what life and the economy is like. They've been stuck in the world of academia. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. This is Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. You may dial toll-free and bring up whatever you want. Here in the studio in beautiful Keene, New Hampshire, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
We've got Skype, so Skype on in here to join us. Skype username, lrn.fm. And also want to make sure you know about Bitcoin.com. Maybe you're new to the idea of Bitcoin and you've been hearing some of the buzz about it. There's definitely been some more coverage in the mainstream media. As my understanding, Wall Street Journal recently covered the new record highs for the price of Bitcoin. In fact, it's been flirting with new record highs within the last 72 hours, getting closer and closer to $3,000 per Bitcoin. It was around 2850, I would say, 2830 or so today. And so it's been interesting to watch. If you're brand new to it, then you need to learn the basics. And a great place to go to do that is Bitcoin.com. Plus, even if you're not brand new and you know, maybe you want to get the latest news on what's happening with the Bitcoin geek war behind the scenes, you can go to news.bitcoin.com. They've got all kinds of neat features at bitcoin.com, including games that you can play with your Bitcoin. You can get the latest there at their news section. There's also even a forum where you can interact with other Bitcoin users. Go to bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com. As we go to your calls and thoughts, more about Venezuela socialism coming up here in moments from the Foundation for Economic Education. But first, we've got Bill on the line in California. Bill, you're on with Ian and Daryl.
Hey, how you guys doing out there?
Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
First of all, I want to let you know that there's a homeless man up here. I live in the Sierra Nevada, and there's a homeless guy that is mining Bitcoin, he told me.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, mining, that's just basically just, buying the coins and letting the price, the value rise, right?
Nope, not at all. That would be an investment. You can do that anytime. Mining, without getting into too much technical detail, as I understand it, is basically the process by which new Bitcoins come into existence. And it is a mathematical challenge, essentially, that a computer, your computer, or other computers around the world, thousands of them at any moment, are trying to solve. And the mining group that solves that cryptographic challenge is the one that receives the 12.5 Bitcoin reward in order for doing that. Plus, there are also miners' fees that are paid with every transaction on the Bitcoin network that also go to the miners. And I'm not sure who decides who gets the fees. I don't know if I've ever heard that. But maybe it also goes to the people who get the reward. I don't know. But
I think the fees are spread out a little more than the block reward.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard.
I don't know.
I don't know. So we're not experts on this, but that's basically what mining is. It's you've got to use very specialized computer hardware, like graphics cards or hardware that's specifically designed for mining purposes, in order to have a chance at competing in the mining world. It's a big, big money world. It used to be something that anybody could do on their desktop computer, and it's gotten a lot more challenging to accomplish it these days. So what you tend to see in the mining world are large large server farms located in China and other places where power is very affordable. As we were mentioning, Venezuela, the subsidized power has resulted in people that are setting up mining operations, and the cops are coming after them. Now, this homeless guy, you got to have a source of power in order to mine. So where is he plugging in, do you know?
I believe he goes to the library to do it, because he can get free internet at the library. Or, I mean, you know, don't underestimate the homeless community. They're not, they're some of the smartest people around out there to survive on their wits to do. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's smarter than a lot of managers, I think.
I mean, I doubt, yeah. I just, it's hard to imagine somebody carrying in a whole computer into the library, because that's what you would need. You can't just, you can't mine Bitcoin.
He's probably, he's homeless, but, you know, they, like I have a couple of friends that are homeless that I feed and stuff like that. They're even though they're homeless, that they have like friends in the community that give them access to certain things they need to do, you know. But then at night they go back out to the camp. That's all kind of how it works.
There are some cryptocurrencies that you can mine with a laptop, or you can mine with just any old thing.
Now, it would be interesting if maybe he installed some mining software on one of the computers in
hilarious.
The library. And he just goes in to check the account and move it around? I don't know.
I would think he probably wouldn't get away with it for too long, because if you're mining with, like, if you're mining Bitcoin, you got to use graphics cards, right? Or the ASICs or whatever. I don't even know if you can use graphics cards anymore. I think
I
you can.
Know.
I think you can, but I've never actually mined Bitcoin. I've tried it with Litecoin, and I've tried it with BIPcoin, B-I-P coin. So I've done a little bit of mining, but right. I always use the kind of mining where you can just use your computer chip rather than specialized
cores.
Hardware. Yeah, because I'm not willing to go and actually spend money on hardware to mine, because you can't make it back.
Right.
Unless, you know, again, you're in a place where the power is very, very cheap. Bill, any other thoughts, any questions
this
you want to share?
Just before I get to my point, this is a guy that, you know, he's like unshaven, unwashed, you know, with a beard and everything, ragged clothing, and he told me this. So, hey, you know, from anywhere. Anyways, about Venezuela.
Yeah.
Now, you guys, it's a secret topic on the show, and you know, it's one I kind of pay attention to. How much are you factoring into the equation the fact that oil, you know, about 3 years ago, the price of oil pretty much crashed down to less than half of what it was. And Venezuela's economy, for better or worse, and for worse, I think, is basically tied to the price of oil.
It didn't have to be. I mean, you're right. The price of oil has done some damage, but that's only because they were relying on the oil to prop themselves up.
Yes.
Venezuela's economy does not have to be exclusive to oil production. It is a place where in the past it had very, very, you know, a very strong middle class
climate to where they should be able to produce like all of the food.
Yes.
And I think one of the updates you have is how they don't have any of the food.
Correct. And it's because of government interference, government control over people's property, as far as government coming in and, you know, nationalizing industries and taking over people's land and deciding what should be done with it, which, of course, when, again, you put centralized bureaucracy in charge of making decisions for the marketplace, you get all kinds of screw-ups. And so that's why they're bringing in their food from the outside. They're importing everything into Venezuela for the most part, if they can afford to pay for the imports at this point, which is also a big challenge because their government has messed up the economy, not just through relying on the price of oil, but more so through the exchange rate, which the government has. And it, you know, we always talk about this, but the reason why is because it's so important, I think, to all of this. The exchange rate is set by the government 10 to 1, meaning that it's $1. If you go into a bank, you take a U.S. dollar into a bank in Venezuela, and you tell them you want bolivars for it, the Bolivar Fuerte, the so-called strong bolivar, which replaced their old bolivar, 15 years ago or something like that, 10 years?
A while ago.
Yeah, 15, I think
don't remember
15.
Exactly how long.
But if you walk into that bank, they'll hand you 10 bolivar. Now, if you go into the streets and you find somebody who's willing to take that dollar from you, would you mind going, Daryl, real quick to dollar today? Because the last time we checked it, it was 6,000, more than 6,000 bolivar per U.S. dollar. If you go into the streets, what will you get tonight for one U.S. dollar if it's come up already?
Dollar today, about 7,100.
7,100 of them. And so that really wreaks some serious havoc. We can talk more about that coming up here. Thank you, Bill, for your call tonight. I appreciate it. The toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE. That's a record high that I've seen. That's we were looking at it previously when it was 2,000, 4,000. We're coming up. Free Talk Live.
North to Port is a Liberty-inspired fiction podcast about a band on tour. Each episode chronicles the band's adventures in the form of a radio interview at a tour stop location. Listen as North to Port explores Liberty themes in friendly ways, with humor and music. To listen to the podcast and the accompanying album, please visit northtoport.com. That's NORTHTOPORT.com. Or just search North to Port in your favorite podcatcher.
Free Talk Live, dial toll free. If anything you want, our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
We do have Skype as well. Our Skype username is lrn.fm, so feel free to join us there. We're talking about the situation in Venezuela. And how did they get to where they are? I mean, it's easy to just point your finger and say, socialism, see? Well, you know, you need to talk a little bit more about what specific policies led to the country's downfall. We're doing that and also sharing a story from FEE.org, the Foundation for Economic Education. It's Ian and Daryl here. Our toll-free number, 855-450-FREE, like freedom, if you want to join us and comment. You can also bring up anything you want. Now, do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? And it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast, private, and easy. Fees are low and transactions are fast and can even be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime for just pennies on the dollar. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. Join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. You can find out more at Dash.org. There's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now. Go to Dash.org and find out why. As we continue here, so we had a gentleman on the phone who was asking about, well, isn't this because of the price of oil? I mean, oil used to be at this high price, and then it, you know, went dramatically down a few years ago, and Venezuela's economy has been spiraling down the toilet ever since. Isn't this the major factor here?
It's definitely a large factor, but the fact that the Venezuelan government was so dependent on one thing just goes to show why you should not put all of your eggs in one basket. And right now, the country is so poor that they cannot export oil.
That's correct.
They cannot. Let that sink in. They cannot export oil.
There are ships. The barges. Yeah.
That cannot be cleaned or inspected to be able to leave port.
Right, because they owe a bunch of money and they can't, you know, basically pay their debts at this point, and they can't afford to clean the ships.
How long ago was it when we had the report that they could not afford their money?
Correct. They couldn't even afford to buy money is what you're saying. They have a private company that prints it for
several private companies.
Well, right, because one private company was like, yeah, we're not going to print any more money for you. You owe us $70
million. $72 million.
Yeah, and that's U.S. dollars that they owe them, which, of course, they don't have. They don't have that kind of money sitting around to pay for this
We'll
stuff.
Pay you in Bolivar Fuerte.
Which they don't want. Because who would want Bolivar Fuerte when the actual street value of the Bolivar Fuerte, according to DollarToday.com, is over 7,100 Bolivar Fuerte to one U.S. dollar, while the government is still prancing around saying that it's 1 to 10.
10 to 1.
And I mean, it's just a crazy thing. And that's where this really comes from. Because even if, you know, not only are they telling business owners, we're going to take your business, so they are nationalizing right. businesses and then running them into the ground, running them into the red. That 70, like I saw a story several weeks ago that 70% of the businesses that they've nationalized are in the red. And that's.
I'm surprised it's only 70%.
Right. I mean, who knows? We're probably getting the numbers from the government, so maybe they're cooking the books. But regardless, so you've got this incredibly terrible situation where if you're in business in Venezuela and they have not yet nationalized your industry, like if you've lucked out and haven't had, you know, your business taken from you, and I don't know, maybe you would prefer to have your business taken from you, so at the very least you could have a reason to leave. If you're still one of those intrepid Venezuelan business people who are still in the marketplace, still trying to, you know, service your customers, trying to, you know, get your product out there and get your employees paid at the end of the day, God bless you for doing that, and the government hasn't swooped in and taken your operation from you yet, well, then you have to deal with this exchange rate.
Well, hold on. So you just sort of mentioned two different things as if they were the same. So there are the industries that have been nationalized.
That's right.
And then there are businesses where the government has come in and just taken everything without saying you're nationalized.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is one of them is the government says we're taking over your business.
Right.
And the other is we're just taking all of your stuff.
Because you're going to shut them down is what you're saying.
Right. So there was the toy company where the Federales came in and seized all of the toys and said, you're charging too much. Yeah. We're taking all of your toys.
Gave away a bunch of Barbies.
There have been stories about some of the bakeries that had some of their stuff seized because they were making too many confections or something. They weren't using the proper amount of state-sanctioned flour. They weren't using the proper ingredients. And
illegal
they had
donuts.
Their stuff taken.
Brownies
the
feds, or something.
The Federales didn't say, we run this bakery now.
Yep, we're just taking
They
this.
Just took right. the stuff.
Just like the U.S. government going into marijuana stores and just taking the weed and never
or
even charging someone.
Head shops.
Yeah, exactly.
And, we're taking all of your glass pipes.
Good luck getting it back. That all happens. But also, if you're still in business and then you have to actually, and you still have a product that you can make legally, then you have to, or purchase legally, then you have to deal with the exchange rate. And
right.
your problem comes into play when the businesses around you outside of Venezuela, because again, most businesses in Venezuela have to import goods.
Yes.
They want to get paid in dollars. Well, you don't have the dollars necessarily, and it's not also legal for you to pay them in dollars either. So you're kind of caught in a real, you know, rock and hard place situation where how do you get the product that you need to sell to your customers if you can't pay legally with the dollars that you need? You can't do it. I mean, it's like it's a
right.
near impossibility. And I'm sure it's not legal to buy from the black market, but ultimately that's probably where a lot of products come from these days
yes.
in Venezuela. So it's a mess. Back to the story here over at the Foundation for Economic Education. This is fee.org's Marion L. Tupi writing. He says that, as I've argued before, all socialist countries eventually come to experience similar economic and political problems. And just as surely, there will always be those in the West who will jump to socialism's defense. Vladimir Lenin, the founder of the Soviet state, called such people useful idiots. I was reminded of the immensely seductive nature of socialism this week when Tucker Carlson, the host of the eponymous show on Fox News, hosted a young socialist from the Students and Youth for a New America. To give you a sense of the conversation between the two, I've transcribed some of Dakota Lilly's statements below.
She said, who is Dakota Lilly?
This is the person from the Students and Youth for a New America. So a socialist, a young socialist.
Yep.
She says, quote, we need to acknowledge that what Venezuela is facing right now is terrorism at the hands of the opposition. Opposition has bombed schools, they have bombed buses, and they have taken wiring and strung it across roads to behead cops on motorcycles. These are not choir boys, these are violent extremists hell-bent on taking away the progress that Venezuela has made over the past few years. She said further, if you look at the casualties that have happened in the past few months in these protests, the majority of those who have been killed have been trade unionist leaders, have been dedicated Chavistas, have been people on the left. She says further, in terms of economics, the sanctions that the United States has put on Venezuela and the hoarding done by multinational corporations in Venezuela certainly does not help the economic situation, unquote.
So I will, you know, agree with part of that statement, that sanctions placed by the United States government don't help situations.
That's true. But that's about all that you can really agree with.
That's all I can agree with her on.
Right.
But, you know, at least, you know, there's something where we agree.
Almost everything that Lily says is demonstrably false. Extensive reporting by the New York Times, hardly a promoter and defender of unbridled capitalism, shows that most of the victims of political violence in Venezuela have been anti-government protesters. And by the way, they've been dying at the hands of the thugs that she's talking about, the Chavistas,
right,
the motorcycle gangs that have been armed by the government there. There's more coming up, and you can share your thoughts on Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. We're talking about socialism in the crown jewel of socialism, Venezuela. We'll get deeper into that coming up here. You can share your thoughts with us. It's Ian and Daryl in the studio tonight. And our toll-free number, as always, is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. So we're going to get back into this. And, of course, you can bring up anything you want if you want. Been discussing the story from fee.org, the Foundation for Economic Education, looking at what Venezuela can teach young socialists. And he, the article's author here, Marion L. Tupi, is recounting an interview he saw on the Tucker Carlson show, where they had a young socialist on the air who was kind of defending and trying to explain what was going on in Venezuela. But as the article here points out, what the young socialist said, almost everything that came out of her mouth was demonstrably false. Even if you look to the New York Times, which, as they point out, is hardly a promoter and defender of unbridled capitalism, it shows that most of the victims of political violence in Venezuela have been anti-government protesters. Moreover, the sanctions imposed by the United States on a few individuals connected to the Venezuelan government have nothing to do with that country's economic meltdown. Aside from oil exports, Venezuela does not have or make anything that anyone in the world wants to buy. And that's because of the government's policies that basically prevent them from doing business.
Yes.
Worldwide. Thus, when the oil price collapsed from $140 to less than $50 a barrel, the country lost most of the foreign exchange it needed to purchase food and consumer goods abroad. Shortages ensued. Admittedly, it's not entirely fair to criticize American millennials for their almost unfathomable ignorance. The state school system is, by and large, broken. American pupils can go through years of primary and secondary education without learning about communist crimes and socialist economic failures. Solutions to these problems are not easy to find. History and economics are not the most popular of subjects, and more often than not, the faculties are left-leaning. I can tell you, when I was in government school, I found history to be the most boring class of them all because
I loved history.
One of the teachers, her idea of teaching the class, and this was at a supposed gifted school, mind you.
All right.
Her idea of teaching was to put up transparency after transparency of notes and have everybody copy them down.
So when you say transparency, she had one of the projector things and just...
That's right.
Put the...
Sheet after sheet after sheet after sheet of just rote copying, copying, copying. That's all the class was.
What?
Yeah.
So, like, she wouldn't even read the things?
Oh, she'd read it, but that's all the class was. Just her speaking these sheets as people took notes. Now, that wasn't every history class I ever had, but that was a great example of how boring.
But was there, Q&A of, what do you mean when you say that... You know, Emperor Palpatine did blah, blah, blah. And yes, I know Emperor Palpatine's from Star Wars. I couldn't think of anybody.
Yeah, whatever.
Constantine. That's a real life guy. So why did he fill in the blank?
I don't recall. I mean, we're talking about a long time ago. All that I really took away from the class was boring. So, I think a lot of people have had that particular experience with history class. But going on here, to make matters worse, young people such as Dakota Lilly are deeply idealistic and easy prey to the siren call of socialism. They see the imperfections of free market democracy at home and assume that countries with the opposite economic and political arrangements, such as socialist Venezuela, must offer a better life to their people. And, you know, shame on the fee for even calling this a free market.
Right.
I think that that's part of the problem here is that when you label the United States as free market, you are doing the free market a disservice because, as you gave a myriad of examples before, Daryl, regarding imports and businesses here in the U.S. where there's all kinds of controls by the government, all kinds of regulations that get in the way of people just getting things done, just trying to serve a customer.
Right, and we covered something. I think it was last Thursday, might have been last Friday, about city not too far from where I was born and raised requiring teenagers that cut grass over the summer get a business license.
Was this Thursday night?
It was last week. I forget if it was last Thursday or last Friday.
Yep.
It was a night you weren't here. But Gardendale, Alabama, telling teenagers, you have to pay us $110 to be able to cut grass.
Or else.
Some of these kids were saying, I get $30 from this person and $20 from this person and $30 here.
Right.
So you've got to cut four lawns before you wind up breaking even.
Yeah.
And that's just on the business license. That's not counting the gas that you're paying to put in the mower.
Right.
Whatever you're, spending to travel around, assuming that you're leaving your neighborhood and not able to just walk to everybody. And then how often are people getting grass cut? Once every 2 weeks? Once a month?
In the South, probably at least once every 2 weeks, I would think. But still, it doesn't matter. It's the principle of that is that the government's standing in the way. That is not a free market.
Right.
The government is demanding an extraction from you.
My point is that, just to show how horrible it is. Okay, so now this person has to work for a month before they wind up actually having something to show for it.
And didn't it turn out that it was the licensed people who were complaining, meaning the other businesses, the the yard landscapers, those people?
Yeah, the professional landscapers. Right. These kids are taking our gerbs!
Sick.
What?
Yeah,
it's almost as bad as, the busybodies that run around calling the cops because some 5-year-old selling lemonade and homemade cookies.
Yep, somebody calls the cops
on
those
chances
people.
Are the 5-year-old didn't actually make the lemonade and homemade cookies, but still, let the 5-year-old sell the lemonade and homemade cookies. Let the 12-year-old sell the lemonade and homemade cookies. Hell, let everybody sell lemonade and homemade cookies if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, what's the problem with it? I was glad to see that that a lemonade stand around the corner from the LRN.FM studios a few years ago was left unmolested. So I don't think we've had that problem in New Hampshire, but the lemonade crackdowns have happened in a lot of the states around the country. And it's a perfect example, especially for young people, of what life is like in the real world, where if you want to try to do business on whatever product or service, there's going to be some government bureaucrat who comes around and sticks his hand out, and then if you don't put money in it, he'll stick a gun in your face.
Right, and you have to ask the question, is the government bureaucrat doing this of their own volition, or are they doing it at the behest of someone else?
Well, they're always doing it at their own volition. I mean, the cops could, if a cop was called to a lemonade stand, he could laugh at the dispatcher and say, find somebody else and take whatever consequences come from that.
Right. But
so he's still doing it on his own volition if he goes and.
Right. I understand that, the police officer is personally responsible for what actions he takes.
Just like in Nuremberg.
But there's the question of, is the police officer just that bored that he's driving around looking for lemonade stands?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Or is he responding because his supervisor said, hey, we got a call. I need you to go fill in the blank. Just like when you had the incident, what was it, close to a decade ago, the couch on the side of the house.
That's right.
Where it was one city bureaucrat that called and complained to another city bureaucrat, so then somebody came out.
Correct.
So it wasn't just the zoning guy was that bored that I'm going to go screw with Ian because of a couch.
No, that came later.
Somebody else.
there was a bureaucrat who did that later on, Fred Parcells, but that was a different bureaucrat in that particular
case. Right, but no, that's what I'm saying. Are they doing it of their own volition, or are they responding because some lawn service guy called and made a complaint? Some hotel called and said, this Airbnb is really hurting.
Oh, yeah.
I used to be at 90% capacity. Now I'm only at 89% capacity.
Right.
You really have to do something.
That happens all the time. You're absolutely right. But, you know, I'd still blame the cop if they because the cop could, even if the cop went, even if the cop didn't blow off the call, even if he was like, okay, I'll take care of it. And then he shows up, buys some lemonade from the kid, and leaves. You know,
right.
He could have done that too. So,
true.
So any cop that shows up and actually gives these kids a hard time is a scumbag.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make the point, and I hope it comes across to our more conservative listeners that, you know, and the reason I say the more conservative listeners is those are the listeners that are more than likely going to say, we're a nation of laws. The laws have to be enforced.
Yep, even on little kids.
Even on little kids.
Lemonade
and
stand.
These are also a lot of times the people, well, the police should just use discretion. Well, which is it? Do you enforce the laws or do you let them use discretion?
Right, because, you know, please use discretion on everyone. Why should kids get a break? Give everybody a break. Let people just do business without asking permission from the government. So again, the idea of saying all of this was to say that calling the United States a free market is a huge problem, and
yes.
They should know better over at the Foundation for Economic Education. Great organization. They really do some great writing. More coming up. Hour 3 is on.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live. You may dial in toll-free here, 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. With you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian.
And Daryl.
We've been talking about the socialism in Venezuela, some lessons, a lot of lessons can be learned from anybody paying attention over there. And there's more to share from that world. It's a crazy one. Also, a little bit of good news. Apparently, Uruguay is now the first country in the world where you can smoke marijuana wherever you like. But let's go to your phone calls and thoughts here first as we go to Ralph in New Jersey. Now, Ralph, before you get into what you were calling about, I want to remind you that we have been not really very stringently enforcing, but we had informed you previously that if you continue to call about the exact same thing every time, we're going to have to put some restrictions on your calls. So with that in mind, are you going to talk about something different from the last time you called, or are you once again going to focus on race?
Black criminality.
Yeah, that's the exact same thing that you called about last time. What new claim are you going to bring to the table?
Because there are people who believe that this is a socioeconomic issue. In point of fact, it is not. Okay, I have a cousin who happens to be a police officer.
He has a cousin.
I have a member of the family who happens to be a police officer.
Okay.
I asked him, "What exactly is the driving? You know, the factor driving behind black criminality? Okay, is it socioeconomic or is it an issue about character?" He is more
about
of the latter.
What character?
Because he is more of the latter character. Okay, I'm not a social worker. You know, I don't. I don't.
Are you suggesting that people are... Hold on. Are you suggesting that people are criminals because they're...
driven into criminality because of their character, yes.
It seems to me that most people are driven to criminality because of their life circumstances, that they feel like they don't have any other options in a lot of cases.
And because everything's illegal and there's minimum wage that says you're priced out of employment. So you have to go find work in the black market, and well, the black market is illegal.
How do you explain the fact that a police officer is hanging on to dear life after what these savages and savage who happens to be black? Or this police officer happens to be black. The whole incident happened there in Brooklyn, New York. Okay. And it all started in a car, with a vehicle, you know, with a traffic stop. Okay, he was trying to check a car, and there was something behind him checking that car. And you know, before he knew it, he was dragged this car speed away, and the officer, this young black officer,
so a cop got hit by a car.
He was blind.
Was dragged.
He was what?
This young black officer was drugged by the car. And
was
he is,
what?
Drugged by a car.
Oh, drugged by the car.
So a cop got hit by a car, yeah. And Ralph wants us to give some justification for it?
I don't know what Ralph is. I think he's just complaining.
He said, can you explain this?
I don't want you to justify anything except the fact that these savages and animals, you know, are doing...
Are you saying, just to be clarified, are you saying that the black officer is also a savage or an animal?
No. The people in the car.
Okay, so you can discern the difference between a
bad guy did a bad thing.
Yeah. What does it matter, the skin color? You can find all kinds of bad white people, too, and I bet you
and
if we went
some
down...
bad Filipinos. Well,
yeah, I bet you if we went down to the Philippines, we'd find a whole bunch of bad Filipinos.
Duterte and all of his little minions that are killing people that have drugs.
Do I have something to say here?
I don't know if you have something to say.
Is it something new? That's what I want to know.
Okay. I'm writing President Duterte a letter to express my, you know... frustration to him about the black criminality going on in this country. He seemed to have an understanding of that because at a news conference, he told the reporter, and this is a white guilty reporter, you know, they are killing blacks in America.
Yeah, hold on, they've got white guilty reporters in the Philippines?
That's right. You think they are only going after Trump? Oh, you know, no, sirree. No, they're not only going after Trump. Don't get me wrong. Uh-huh. They're also going after the... Look at the way he's leading up in the New York Times.
Is every white person white guilty? I'm just curious.
By the way, when President Duterte visits this country, I'll make sure he will have a meeting with the white nationalist group because they love that guy.
You're going to make sure of that?
Absolutely.
Now, why would the white nationalists like Duterte? Just because he hates black people?
And he kills drug dealers.
Are white nationalists in favor of killing drug dealers?
They're generally law and order types, and drugs are illegal.
You and Wolfman might not believe this.
Wolfman?
Wolfman, you're right there. Okay.
Why are you calling Daryl Perry Wolfman? Is it because of the W in his name? Daryl Wolfman Perry?
Yes. Right.
I used to have long, shaggy hair.
That's true. You did have long hair at one point.
All right. But, you know, one of the white nationalists I talked to asked him, besides taking on
politics,
Obama,
sure does make for strange bedfellows, doesn't it? I mean, you've got this Filipino guy who's now talking with white nationalists. Why don't you call Chris Cantwell show? Have you ever called Chris? It'd be an interesting call.
I know you want even better. I listen to the David Duke show. How about that?
Oh my God!
I know you want even better. That's race.
Who's more racist, David Duke or Chris Cantwell?
Well, you know, in terms of degree, I would like to believe, you know, less of a racist Chris Cantwell and David Duke, given the fact that
all right, I can't understand you anymore. Thank you for the call tonight, Ralph. Appreciate it. Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE.
It just turned into gibberish.
Yeah. I mean, that's nothing. I've tried to tell the guy he can get Skype. It'd be easier to understand. If you've got a foreign accent, it's always easier to understand you if you are on an HD voice kind of transmission method, like, you know, something like a Skype, for instance, where the quality level, the vibrance, the frequency range of the sound that would come to us would be more crisp, more easy to understand, especially when you have a thick accent like that and a not-so-great phone.
Yes.
So please, Skype the show from wherever you are. Our Skype username is lrn.fm. And by the way, it's available to you throughout the show, and whenever people use it, it's almost always an upgrade in quality, unless there's some sort of issue.
Just a reminder, we don't monitor the Skype 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
No, we don't. Why? What happened? Did something happen recently on the Skype?
There's been one particular person that has been trying to call.
Are you talking about the guy in the crazy ward?
The day.
Yeah. The guy who, he called once on the air, and he said he was in a psych ward. So I think it's that guy that you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, Daniel.
I know I tried to take a call from him one time, but, you know,
off the air?
No, during the show.
Oh, okay.
Answered the phone, and, you know, like, we were during a commercial break or something.
Right.
And by the time we came out of the break, he had hung up.
Mm.
And then after the show, you know, like, five
starts
missed calls immediately.
Yep, well, there's no explaining crazy. Our toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. So a little bit of good news from South America, because we talked about Venezuela, and
yes,
you know, it's not good news ever coming out of Venezuela these days, but there is good news coming out of Montevideo down in Uruguay. The story coming from The Guardian, and Alicia Castilla was watering the plants in her garden on a quiet Sunday afternoon when five police patrol cars screeched to a halt outside her home. A team of 14 officers armed to the teeth stormed through her gate and arrested the mild-mannered 66-year-old intellectual. They seized everything they could find, computers, her mobile phone, books, and even an orange squeezer. Or an orange squeezer. They also impounded the 29 cannabis plants she was watering and 24 grams of marijuana they found in her possession. She was taken to the police station where she spent the night handcuffed to a bench. There's good news coming in this story. It doesn't start out very good. More coming up here on Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE, like freedom. This is Free Talk Live. You may dial toll-free, take control of the airwaves, and bring up whatever is on your mind. Our number here, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, so you can Skype on in here at Skype username lrn.fm. With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
Don't forget, if you want to save big time on your purchases at Amazon, all you have to do is go to saveatpurse.com, saveatpurse.com. That is where you can save easily 20% on pretty much whatever you want to get, although I did have to reduce something to 19% the other day to get it to sell. But either way, it's still saving way more than you would otherwise save, which would be nothing if you just go and shop through Amazon normally. So if you go through saveatpurse.com, you decide what savings you get, and you can decide based on how patient you are, basically. If you're willing to wait, then, you know, you don't need something urgently, you can try setting it for like 25 or 30% off, or even shoot for 33 if you want.
Even if you do need it urgently, you can still save a guaranteed 5% using what they call Purse Instant.
Yep, and you've done that one quite a bit.
Yes.
I still have yet to actually use Purse Instant because I generally am not that... I figure if I'm going to order something online, I'm generally not in a hurry to get it. But there are those instances.
See, I've got a drink in my hand that I've started ordering from Amazon because the Target stopped carrying this particular flavor. And I generally will wind up forgetting until I'm almost out. Oh, I need some of this. And then, you know, I don't want to wait.
See. Bad planning on your part.
Not necessarily bad planning, just, you know, like not realizing, oh, I'm down to five of these.
Gotcha.
And I generally drink one a day. So, all right, I need to get some by the end of the week. And, you know, I don't want to have it, you know, stacked up to where I'm always having, you know, like a case laying around.
So my most recent discount was 19% off of a DVI cable. So I'm ordering a big, long DVI cable for here in the studio.
All right.
And that was 19% off of that. So I got it for less than $12. The original price was $14.
Now, how many transactions have you had total?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Quite a few. I can go over to my
I'm looking
order
at mine
history.
Right now. So yeah. While you pulled yeah. yours up, I've had 59 transactions. And saved $546.43.
That is a lot of savings.
Yes.
Looks like I've had 91 transactions and have saved over $1,760 thus far. So it's awesome. It works.
Yes. I mean,
this is no joke. SaveItPurse.com, SaveATPurse.com. All right, so back to the good news coming out of Uruguay, where The Guardian is reporting that Uruguay is the first country in the world where you can smoke marijuana legally wherever you like. Now, they're giving a not-so-great story to start out here with a 60.
So I'm curious here. Before we delve too far, I wonder if they're basically treating cannabis the same way they treat tobacco in Uruguay. Or
is it unregulated there, tobacco?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Because a lot of places here in the U.S., you can't smoke tobacco.
Correct.
Within 25 feet or 50 feet or whatever the random number is.
It's not just tobacco. You can't
of an
smoke.
Entrance.
So you can have mint leaves in it rolled up. They're not going to let you smoke that either. You're not going to be able to get away with telling the cop, oh, I'm smoking mint. It's okay. You're just not allowed to smoke.
I've never seen
places.
Anybody smoke yeah. mint leaves.
Me neither. But I did see it when they had the Jokers versus the Tokers in Central Square in Keene back in 2009, where
okay.
the idea was. This was back when we had daily cannabis smokeouts happening in Central Square, the Central Park here in, I guess technically it's a common, which is slightly different from a park. But anyway, they had these.
There's a slight legal distinction.
The commons never close. The parks can have hours. That's one of the distinctions. I know that. But in this case, there was massive smokeouts going on. And one of the ideas was that when the cops were kind of trying to crack down on this, which ultimately they weren't very successful at. But when they were trying to crack down and they'd made a couple of arrests, the idea was, well, let's go in there with fake marijuana cigarettes, meaning
right.
that hand rolled things that looked like they might be joints but weren't actually, but you know, filled with mint or tobacco or something like that. And I believe they actually arrested a guy named Evan, who was one of the key organizers behind the event, for smoking mint. So they ended up having to drop those charges after they found out there wasn't actually marijuana in that hand-rolled cigarette that he was smoking. So anyway, back to the story here from TheGuardian.com. The woman was 66-year-old intellectual Alicia Castilla, who was arrested while police impounded her 29 cannabis plants and the 24 grams of marijuana. She had the marijuana plants outside of her home, apparently. And she was taken to a police station where she spent the night handcuffed to a bench. She said, they treated me like the female version of Pablo Escobar, she told The Observer. But far from resembling the infamous Colombian drug lord who had inspired the 2015 Netflix series Narcos, Castilla was a peace-loving, gray-haired author whose book, Cultura Cannabis, had become an unexpected bestseller. Like many Argentinian sexagenarians, she had recently retired to nearby Uruguay. The seized plants were for her personal use. She says, I make a living writing about marijuana, not selling it. Castilla's arrest in 2011 sent Uruguay into shock. Although the consumption of recreational drugs had never been outlawed in a country that prides itself on its broad-mindedness and liberal institutions, its cultivation and sale, however, remained forbidden. The author faced between 2 and 10 years behind bars. Her imprisonment at the women's prison in the town of Canelones became round-the-clock news. She says, I fell into a foul-smelling pit that reminded me of Midnight Express. Cockroaches crawled over the bed. There were rats the size of rabbits in the bathrooms.
Those are either really large rats or really small rabbits.
Castilla realized she had become a national celebrity when her fellow inmates broke into spontaneous applause on her arrival. The eldest of the 120 women imprisoned there, her fellow inmates nicknamed her the Reefer Grandmother, a moniker that was quickly picked up by the press.
So just real quick, I did pull up, apparently smoking in enclosed public spaces is illegal in Uruguay.
Okay, but that applies to smoking anything.
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
Thousands marched to demand her release. The protests soon galvanized a longstanding demand for the full legalization of recreational cannabis. The media coverage was crazy, said Castilla, who is now 72. Legislators started bringing legal marijuana draft bills for me to look at in prison.
That's amazing.
Her three-month incarceration and the lengthy series of trials until the case was finally dismissed by Uruguay's Supreme Court last year finally paid off. The cultivation of cannabis was legalized in 2014, and in July, Uruguay will become the first country in the world where its sale is legal across the entire territory. Eduardo Blasina, director of the recently inaugurated Cannabis Museum, located in a large terracotta-colored property in the old Palermo neighborhood of Uruguay's capital city, Montevideo, says, quote, "It's important for Uruguay to advance towards a logical regulation of recreational marijuana." He says the law gives consumers access to certified, unadulterated marijuana. South America's war against drugs has been absurd, with catastrophic results, no matter which indicators you consider, including consumption. If Uruguay's experience turns out positive, and let me tell you, it will, it'll be easier for other countries, such as Colombia or Mexico, mired in huge problems with powerful narcos, to find a better solution than the disastrous one implemented so far. The toll-free number here tonight is 855-450-FREE. Nice to hear a little bit of good news about the war on drugs being rolled back just a bit. And, of course, when it comes to marijuana, it's the bulk of the war on drugs. We're coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
This is Riley Blake, producer of the Free Talk Live Daily Digest. In addition to the Digest, I host my own weekly podcast called Anarcho Agenda, providing you liberty-oriented content without all the statism. Subscribe to Anarcho Agenda on iTunes, Google Play, or visit anarchoagenda.libsyn.com. That's anarchoagenda.libsyn.com for further details.
It's Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll-free. Join us on the radio here. Bring up whatever's on your mind. Our number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. I was just telling you about SaveItPurse.com as a vehicle to save big time on Amazon, but there's actually more to SaveItPurse. You can actually buy other items that are offered by people on Purse. There are Purse merchants like me. I've got a special edition of Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree, one of my favorite movies, which I had the pleasure of being the executive producer for. Autographed copies of the DVD of Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. There's only, I think, about 30 of them in total, and a couple have already been sold. One of them just sold today. They're
nice.
$20. You get the special edition director's cut DVD with all the DVD bonus features, the 7+ hours of footage. Now, how many movies actually give you basically every clip that made the movie? That's essentially what we do on the DVD-ROM version of this.
Yeah, I don't know of any. You know, George Lucas isn't going to show you the stuff that wound up
right,
on the cutting room floor.
Right, so I guess the interviews aren't included there, but for the most part, all the activist footage that pretty much makes up 90% of the film,
right.
All of the original full-length activist videos are on the DVD-ROM. You pop it in your DVD drive on your computer, and that's how you get access to all of those files. But the movie itself is the director's cut. It's got two commentary tracks, one of them with Derek J, me, and Bo Davis, who is the editor of the film, one with just Derek J.
You know, I don't think I've watched either of the commentary tracks.
I suspect not many people have. I mean, you have to have the DVD.
I did watch about 10 different versions of the movie before it ever actually came out.
Oh, that's right. You previewed them with us back in the day, right?
That, and I just happened to have been sitting around when Bo Davis was working on stuff.
It.
And yeah, I saw a bunch of different versions.
Yeah, so it's great. Roger Paxton was actually the first person from the Lava Flow podcast.
Nice.
He was the first person to order the special autographed edition of the DVD. You can get the non-autographed edition as well for about $10 worth of Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. So right now, the autographed version is available cryptocurrency only through Save It Purse. But the way to get to it is you have to go to dvd.victimlesscrimespree.com. You won't find it in a search if you look over at Save It Purse. So you have to go to dvd.victimlesscrimespree.com and then select the option that allows you to buy the autographed version of that. And somebody else just ordered one today, so thank you for doing that. People were asking for this, so I went out to the Seacoast a few weeks ago, and Derek and I, we went out and kind of hung out and went to a really cool musical show on the Seacoast. We spent about a couple hours just pulling out all these DVDs, unwrapping them, pulling out the disc and the front cover. We actually yep. autographed both the front cover and the disc, so you know we couldn't decide which one was better, so we just did both. So go to dvd.victimlesscrimespree.com. And for those of you that want to just get the regular version, there's links to the regular versions of the DVD there as well. These are out of print, by the way.
You can find the regular version using the search on Purse.
Correct. And also the regular version, for those of you who don't have cryptocurrency, is available through eBay as well. Thanks to Conan for fulfilling those orders. These are the last of these DVDs. There's only about 120 or so remaining. And will they ever come back? I don't know. You know, I don't know how long it's going to take to sell 120 of these things. It could be, 5 years. And then by that time, nobody will have a DVD player. So who knows? Anyway, if you want to get your copy.
Oh, somebody will still have a DVD player for nostalgia's sake.
That's true. If you want to get your copy, go to dvd.victimlesscrimespree.com. If you've never seen the movie, you can just go to victimlesscrimespree.com and watch it for free online. Let's go to Andy in New Orleans. You're listening. Hello, Andy. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, yeah. Am I on?
You're on the radio.
Wonderful. So I wanted to ask you guys, y'all are obviously a couple of learned gentlemen. And we're talking about the situation in Uruguay as if it's a positive situation.
Yeah, the situation for listeners just tuning in is that you can, or as of July, you'll be able to legally smoke and own and purchase and sell cannabis across the country.
Right, which is the kind of full legalization that, in America we were imagining. I don't know. When I was in high school smoking a shit ton of dope.
Oh, you can't say that on the radio. Unfortunately, we have to dump your call. I don't want to, but...
I know, Ian, that I wanted to have you sort of get down to this part of the story as we were going along, but I'll go ahead and jump down to...
I would like to encourage our caller to call back another night and not use the S word, and then we would be happy to keep his call on the air.
Yes, and again, article from The Guardian, they say the most controversial of the aspects of the law goes into effect in July, where legal marijuana will only be available at pharmacies.
Oh.
Though the price will be highly accessible, only $1.30 per gram compared to $3 on the street.
Is that the government setting that price? Because that's what it sounds like. How would they know?
It sounds like it.
Because how would they know right now what the price is going to be?
Right. It sounds as though they're setting a price. Also says that consumers must register with the government first.
Oh, no.
They'll be required to identify themselves with a digital thumb scan to then be able to withdraw their weekly maximum of 10 grams.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, so this is not necessarily a free market. This is not a... as legal as tomatoes, as I often like to say how I think stuff should be. But this is certainly better than we're going to throw you in jail for buying it. It's certainly better than we're going to throw you in jail for growing a plant.
Juan Manuel Varela, the 28-year-old manager of MDAR, which is a Spanish-language acronym for high-quality marijuana, says, quote, "I'm happy because now you can plant without going to prison, but like many things in Uruguay, the new law is a good idea that's being applied badly."
Right, and let me give an example of how the regulated cannabis market works in Colorado, because I've purchased some in Colorado. What happened is when I walked into the dispensary, I did have to show an ID, but that was just to prove that I'm over the age of 21.
Right. Oh, it's 21 and up there.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's regulated like wine, quote unquote.
Gotcha.
Although there are regulations that apply specifically to cannabis. Of if you're not a Colorado resident, you can only buy a certain amount. If you are a Colorado resident, you can buy slightly more. But there's no regular. If I were to walk into any of the places that sell wine in Colorado, they wouldn't say, oh, sorry, sir, you don't live here, so you can only buy two bottles.
Yeah.
Whereas if you did, you could buy four.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, special regulations.
I wonder if that's going to happen in Massachusetts.
Probably.
Because they're going to get a lot of business
same thing
from
in
New Hampshire.
to where, you know, they're already saying you're allowed to have up to X amount, and then there's no penalty at all.
Hmm.
And X is different in both Maine and Massachusetts.
Right.
So, you know, there are still limits, but it's not this bad to where you have to register with it. Yes, government, I would like to buy some cannabis, please.
Well, now that's for the people buying it. I wonder what regulations they have around the people growing it.
I believe it says down in here that if you want to grow, you also have to register with the government that you want to grow.
Man, they just can't. The government people just can't let it go. They can't let go of the desire to control. They always got to have some sort of system,
right?
Some kind of rules, some kind of, you know, regulations in place,
right? And
so they can tax it and control it.
And this seems more to be control than tax.
Well, I bet you there's a tax in there too, Daryl.
Probably. It doesn't specify in the article here from The Guardian, but even on stuff to where if you want to grow a garden, in a lot of places, there's all kind of zoning. You're not allowed to have a garden that's visible from the street.
Correct. Yeah, they've gone after, I remember it was Orlando, Florida, where people were targeted for having
the side of the house is considered to be the front yard unless it's behind a fence.
Yep, it's crazy stuff. And they were threatened over it, you know, threatened with having their garden torn out and fines per day issued. More coming up on Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us on the radio. You can bring up anything you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype as well, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. Here in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
Of course, we want to invite you to get behind Free Talk Live as a Free Talk Live amplifier. The AMP program stands for Advertise, Market, and Promote, and the idea is a simple one. You send $5 a month into Free Talk Live, and we invest that into the show so we can get on more new radio stations around the country, bring new internet listeners on board with the program, exposing new people to the ideas of freedom. And we can do that with your help, and you get access to some pretty cool perks, like access to the AMP-only call-in lines, the AMP-only podcast, which doesn't have the regular podcast commercials our normal podcast does. Also, the AMP-only Facebook group, which is a great way to get interactive with other Free Talk Live listeners. And if you're on the brand new Free Talk Live forum at forum.freetalklive.com, you get an AMP badge if you let us know that you're there. So once again, forum.freetalklive.com to check out the new forum. And that's not just for amplifiers. That's for anybody who wants to check out that forum. It's open to anybody listening to Free Talk Live. So join the AMP program. You can use Bitcoin. You can use a credit card. You can use PayPal over at amp.freetalklive.com. Makes a big difference for us when you do that. Thank you again. That's ampamp.freetalklive.com. To the phones, to Skype, where Cognitive Dissident is on the line. Hello, Cognitive Dissident.
Hey, guys.
Hey, where are you calling from tonight?
I'm calling from somewhere in the United States.
All right, then. Go ahead with your
allegedly,
thoughts.
Allegedly, somewhere in the United States. And before you go with your thoughts, I just want to say that I love the show prep that you always send Drs. Brian Sovereign and Stephanie Murphy for Sex and Science Hour.
Hmm.
I can neither confirm nor deny that I am the one sending that show prep.
Well, all there's someone using that same name. I'm assuming it's the same person.
That's the and Science Hour, which you can hear on, was it sexandsciencehour.com, I think?
Yes.
Also available on lrn.fm. So go ahead with your call tonight.
I was wondering if you guys have heard of the user-activated soft fork in the Bitcoin network that is coming,
yes,
supposedly?
Yes, yes, we have. This is a big topic. Were you about to ask what we think about it?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a very big topic in the world of Bitcoin. It's also a kind of technical topic, so I will try to make it as understandable as possible for those of us or those of our audience who are unfamiliar with Bitcoin, which is a challenge.
Yes.
And coming up next week, we're expecting Wednesday night Charlie Schrem, who longtime listeners of the show may remember as the guy in charge of BitInstant, one-time sponsor of Free Talk Live, ended up going to prison for a couple of years, federal prison, for selling some Bitcoin to somebody who he knew was going to be using it on the Silk Road. So we're going to have Charlie Schrem back on the air with us, and he's going to weigh in on the user-activated soft fork.
And hopefully he can explain this in very simple terms.
That's,
because
I've told him he needs to.
That I've ever pulled up, it's not explained.
Okay.
If you can't explain it in like one or two paragraphs, then you know most people,
that's part of the challenge.
The eyes are going to glaze over.
I'm going to do my best right now because I have done a fair amount of reading about this thing. So for listeners unfamiliar, Bitcoin is what?
Apolitical cryptocurrency?
It is. It's money for the internet. Yeah, cryptocurrency. It is not issued by any bank or government, and so it's software basically that was released a while back by someone named Satoshi Nakamoto. Nobody knows who that is.
Right.
He released this code to the world, and since then, since around 2009, it's become the world's most valuable currency. It's an incredible success story. Right now, it's about $2,800 per Bitcoin. And it's just been amazing to watch it. Behind the scenes, unfortunately, Bitcoin has been suffering from a bit of a falling out between some of the programmers who've been working on this software.
Right. And just, you know, one more sort of thing to point out here about Bitcoin. Bitcoin has two things at once. So Bitcoin is the network that ensures that, you know, the Bitcoin currency continues to exist.
Right.
And then there's the currency that allows you to send
funds.
So
it's a decentralized network as well. I don't think I mentioned that earlier.
A good example, and the aforementioned Brian Sovereign gets credit for this. He said the way he explains it is it's kind of like the U.S. dollar and PayPal, but in the same system. So PayPal allows you to send money online, but PayPal does not control or issue the currency.
So there's been this ongoing battle behind the scenes, and we've talked about it on Free Talk Live. So if you are, you know, at the very least a somewhat recent listener, you've probably heard some level of discussion about this. But to break it down as simply as possible, there are two very dug-in sides of geeks who are fighting about which direction Bitcoin's program should go into the future. And one of these particular sides, the user-activated soft fork group, is now basically coming out with a very hard date of when they say they're
going... August 1st.
Yeah, August 1st. So coming up in like 7 weeks, they are going to possibly fork the software. And what that could mean... Now, there's a lot of different possibilities, and we're not going to be able to get into most of them.
Right.
There's a lot of different things that could happen at this moment. But basically what they're doing is they're saying... to the miners, so there's two groups that are of fair importance with Bitcoin. One, the miners, the people who are mining Bitcoin into existence, like and sort of verifying the transactions that are safe on the network. And then there's also the nodes, which help verify transactions as well. And so what they're saying is that the nodes are going to make a stand, some of them, on August 1st, and they're going to say, if you're with us, then we're going to fork this, you know, we're going to move this thing ahead. We're going to, you know, activate segregated witness, which is their big plan to help save the future of Bitcoin. But if you're not with us miners, then we're forking the software off into a second chain and we're going to have two Bitcoins.
Right. So
the
I just found something on Bitcoin Magazine called A Bitcoin Beginner's Guide to Surviving BIP 148.
I would say that's a good place to start for anybody that has Bitcoin and wants to know what to do in this circumstance.
Apparently what's going to happen is this BIP 148 protocol will somehow reject any blocks that do not have SegWit as part of the block.
So the thing is that these BIP 148 people, they have to do by August 1st,
yes,
is they have to get more than half of the nodes of Bitcoin, and there's about 7,000 to 8,000 nodes, supposedly, out there. They've got to get more than half of them on their side. And if they do,
this is saying as long as there is a miner that is using SegWit, then BIP 148 gets activated August 1st.
Well, so that's the thing. There's a big question. Go ahead, Cognitive Dissident.
I think what would be more important to them is to get at least half of the hashing power on their side before August 1st. Not necessarily.
Well, yeah, if they do that, if they get the half of the miners on board, then nothing really will change as far as likely for Bitcoin, as I understand it. But
correct. It says if a majority of the hash power does not signal, but at least some do on August 1st, then that's when this fork happens.
There could be, and it turns out there could be more than two Bitcoin, because we've always been talking about the forks as though there would only be two Bitcoin if it forks, but there's circumstances under which there could be three, four, five different Bitcoins.
And then the question becomes, which of those forks is
the real
actual Bitcoin?
Yep.
Which one winds up getting a new name? What are the new names?
Yeah, this is...
And, you know, this is something, another example of one of these hard forks where, you know, two things wound up calling themselves the same thing. It was Ether and Ethereum Classic.
That's right.
To where the...
And both are still around, and both are doing better now than they were when that happened.
Coders and whatnot for Ether... They saw something that happened that they didn't like, so they undid things. Hmm. And the Ethereum Classic people said, no, you can't just undo things that you don't like. Yep. So we're splitting off because of this rewind.
So we're going to get into this a lot deeper because we're barely scratching the surface on what this thing is. But basically, it's sort of this deadline for these BIP 148 supporters, and BIP stands for Bitcoin Improvement Protocol. It's a proposal to supposedly improve Bitcoin. But if they don't get the support they're looking for, there could be a really ugly split. And it doesn't look like they're going to get it, at least at this point. But then again, they haven't even come out with their program yet. They're about apparently 10% or 11% of the nodes that are signaling for this somehow, even though they haven't even released the official program that they're supposed to be running. So I don't even know, you know, what's going to happen. But a lot of people are really uncertain about what's going to happen to Bitcoin on August 1st. And then there's the other thing of this SegWit 2X, which was the agreement from the consensus conference that they had a couple of weeks ago, that is basically going to be competing with this, and they're going to try to beat them to the punch on July 21st. And we don't have time to get into it, Cognitive Dissonant, but there's a brief opinion. I don't know what's going to happen, and we need to talk more about it, but we don't have time tonight. So thanks for the call. We'll see you tomorrow.
So the protection of life, liberty, and property is what the Free State Project is all about. But it's an effort to move 20,000 people who understand.
It's about demonstrating to the entire country
that, yeah, we can have a free market, a truly free market.
Making it just a freer, great place to live.
It's the world's largest voluntarist libertarian community, and it's only getting bigger.
That's amazing, to be able to move to a place where other people like passionately believe in being free and independent.
What the Free State Project is managing to do, though, is to put their money where their mouth is. Physically getting up across the country and saying, let's go someplace and let's demonstrate the power of these ideas. There's a lot of kind of philosophy that surrounds liberty. There's a lot of thinking about it and talking about it. But here in New Hampshire, people are doing it.
101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, a documentary by Free State Project Early Movers. Watch it free at 101reasonsfilm.com. 101reasonsfilm.com.